Welcome back to the Naked Thoughts Podcast. Ooh. I'm your host, Tiana, and I am here with the one and only Mr. Ryan, originating from, where were you born?
California.
California.
Born in California.
Oh my god, it's Ryan, yeah!
thank you. So happy to be here.
How's life, how are things?
Life is good. I have a delicious blackberry scone.
Blackberry?
And
is
a coffee.
It good?
It's actually pretty dang good. Yeah. It's a little dry, but besides that, I can appreciate the finer things of the scone.
I appreciate the honesty.
Yeah, you gotta give honest ratings.
Yeah, there's always room for improvement.
You can just embellish everything. You're just lying to yourself, you know?
Exactly. Exactly. Well, thank you so much for having.
Of course.
Thank you so much for having me.
Of course. Anytime. Happy to have you here.
You can take over now. So this is me quitting and handing it.
It's a bit of a misnomer, actually. I put the wrong name in when I created this. Very
That's
good
great.
Vocal mask disguisers.
So. Yeah. Those filters go crazy.
Oh, they go gnarly.
Oh my gosh. Okay, I have a plethora of things that I want to talk to you about because
All right.
you have one of the most interesting lives to me.
Okay.
Your experience, your group of experiences, I feel like leads to a large amount of wisdom.
Ooh.
So
glad someone thinks so. A lot of mistakes. What is it? He who has made no mistakes has learned nothing at all. I've learned a lot.
I am here
to tell you. Keep making mistakes, people.
So you were born in California.
And I was born in California, yes.
Where in California?
I was born in the East Bay Area, about 30 minutes outside of Berkeley. I lived there. I actually grew up down the street from my mom's childhood home. I went to the same high school as my mom, and I was good friends with a lot of people that went to my dad's high school. My dad grew up in the area, too. So we grew up in this little tiny town. It's called Pleasant Hill. Nothing happens there. And it's this nice little, like, middle-class neighborhood. Great place to grow up, but eventually you just know everybody in the town and you can't get away with anything fun anymore. So we moved out to Concord, me and a couple of my buddies. I lived there for 3 years with some of my friends. And then my brother and I had always wanted to live together. And so he was living up in Tahoe for a couple of years and he called me one day. We were both shit canned. And he called me, he goes, hey, you want to move to Washington with me? And I was like, yeah, let's send it. And so we just kind of on a whim just decided we're going to move up to Washington. And then we said, like, well, what are we going to do when we get up there? And he's like, we can teach snowboarding on Baker. And I was like, oh, that sounds like fun. So we moved up and we taught snowboarding on Baker for the first winter. And then obviously that doesn't pay very well and it only lasts until, like, March. So we got jobs. He worked at the airport. I started working for district. I ended up moving down this way out on Samish Island to be closer to work. And I've just lived up here working at district ever since.
Wow.
Yeah. So
it was literally just to do it.
It was sort of on a whim. Yeah. When he got out of high school, he's 2 years younger than me. We had tried to live together and we were going to go to Tahoe and he ended up making plans to live with some of his friends up there instead. And I didn't hold it against him. I would have done the same thing if I had friends that were willing to move out together. So he moved to Tahoe and I just stayed in the Bay Area for a little while I was going to college, getting my music degree. So I was down there for a little while until I finally got that call like 3 years after that from Dylan of, hey, you want to move out? Yeah. So.
And is he's younger brother?
He's younger
You're
brother.
You're the oldest
I,
of three?
I'm the oldest of three, yep.
Nice.
Yeah, younger brother, younger sister.
That's
my sister's a doctor. Okay. She's crazy. I
the
somehow
star
went
child.
From the star child to the bohemian kid that you hear from once every 3 weeks. And how's it going? Oh, I got into archery. Oh, really? Like, okay.
Your mom's like, what the fuck is happening
to him? My child.
Yeah. So, that is so funny.
How the mighty have fallen.
So, you grew up in California. That's got to be fucking kind of crazy.
It's cool. You don't realize, like, how specific that place is until you go somewhere else. Like, when your entire worldview is based around the opinions and, like, the happenings of the Bay Area. Like, specifically, like, the Bay Area in California. California is huge. It's
of
got
course,
like 13% of the population of the United States is in California. But in the Bay Area specifically, it's very, very, very liberal. And so you just sort of by default take on certain opinions of stuff like that. But the
I feel like that happens everywhere though, right? You
it
kind
does
of are
everywhere.
The product of your environment.
Yeah, humans, one of the best things about humans and the reason we've gotten so far in the evolutionary chain is because one of our biggest benefits is that we're very adaptable. Mm-hmm. However, this doesn't always happen consciously. A lot of times it's sort of a subconscious
thing. Majority of it
so
is subconscious.
So if you've ever gone
yeah.
like, you know, started working at a new place, you get new coworkers, you make new friends with those coworkers, and then you start kind of adapting into that friends group, and then you end up with, you know, friend group personality one, friend group personality two, and three, but you do kind of amalgamate all of those things together into how you act on like a normal basis. Mm. And it's the same thing, if you don't realize how much different people are, how much different like a society can be until you go and you live somewhere where it's nothing like that. So California was a great place for me to grow up. I was very thankful to have a great place to grow up and to live. And I just needed to see more of the world, so I decided to move up here. Dylan lives in Montana now, which is cool. He's got a fiance. He's engaged.
Wow.
Which is very cool. It makes me feel like I'm slacking in that department a little bit. My grandma always calls me, you have a girlfriend? Yeah, no.
No, grandma.
We're working on me right now. I got some issues, so.
Don't we fucking all, though? That is God, so funny. And so you did a lot of partying down there.
Was that
like the culture of like people just around you in specific, or was it like everyone?
It was, so I would be lying if I said with certainty that it was everyone, because I definitely knew people that didn't do that.
Yeah.
I think more of what it is the kind of people I hung out with were very much party people. And mm-hmm. it's one of those like correlation, not causation things that I can't say whether hanging out with those people turned me into, you know, a party animal, or whether it was, I was on that track anyways and I just found people who were also on that track, you know? But yeah, definitely went to my fair share of crazy, what was it? Nights I'll never remember with the people I'll never forget. So it was kind of, we went to Chico like every couple of months. We had people that went to college up in Chico. We went to San Diego. I went to school in Santa Barbara for a year. Santa Barbara is insane. There's this little college town called Isla Vista, and it's like a half a square mile, and it's just college students.
It's actually where my cousin goes to school, or went to school.
It's gorgeous, and it's right on the beach. And so there was 4 or 5 times where I woke up on the beach, because you would go to the beach and just rage all night long and wake up and the sun's baking you and you're like, oh,
absolutely just dehydrated.
Yeah, you feel like the seaweed that's washing out.
Cracked. Man.
But yeah, no, party culture in California is pretty nuts. There was a lot of different drugs that were coming in and out in California, especially when I was going to high school. Weed was just becoming, not popularized, it had been used everywhere, but they had just started putting it on, you know, you could get your medicinal card.
It was just more accessible.
It was becoming way more accessible and way more acceptable of, you know, it had gotten to the point where I was in high school where I got pulled over by cops at the age of 16 for smoking a pipe while I was driving a car.
Jesus.
And they just let me off with a warning like, hey, dumbass, don't do that, you know? It was such an acceptable thing. And so when I was 16, we started smoking weed. We got a lot into weed. I didn't start drinking until my senior year, really.
Isn't that interesting? Because I was the same exact way. Like, I started smoking a lot earlier than I started drinking. Mm-hmm. To me, alcohol seemed scarier for some reason.
To me, alcohol seemed like more of an adult thing.
Yeah.
And somehow, it seemed like antiquated almost, of like weed was the new thing. Weed was the hip thing. Weed was what our generation chose as a rebellion, which is funny because it's the same thing that the people in the 70s chose as the rebellion.
Yeah.
And so it's funny how the 70s keep coming back.
Yeah. Dude, elite era.
Yeah. Oh, God. God, the fashion in the 70s. Killer. I saw a dude walking a Carhartt vest and bell-bottom jeans the other day.
Yes.
And I just clapped from the window.
It's a king right there.
But so I started drinking secondarily, and then I didn't really get into any other drugs, thank goodness, until I was several more years down the road. I moved in with a couple of my friends, and one of them, Tato, I've talked with you about Tato. Tato is a fantastic human being, and I cannot use words to describe this man, but I'll try my best. But he was homeless for a couple of years before we met him. He was good friends with Thomas in high school, my other roommate. And then he had a bad situation, basically, and he ended up being addicted to meth for like 3 years.
Fuck.
So he got into a lot of other hard drugs in the process. And so when we moved in with him, the most I had done was I was drinking, I'd smoke, and then like once every couple of months we would go and we would take some mushrooms in the park, or we would go take some acid somewhere. But that was like
psychedelic
experience. It wasn't hard drugs. There was no needles. There was no, you know, pipe kind of thing going on. But then when we were living together for forever, it's the same thing of, you know, you just kind of get infected by other people's personalities.
Yeah.
And so Tato was really into just sort of experimenting with whatever he wanted to at the time. So I would come home some nights and he would be clearly on something, and you had to try to figure out what it was he was doing.
It's the
that
game
night.
Of the night. What's
and we go into the bathroom that we shared, and there's like tinfoil and ketamine
oh
out there, and
gosh.
You're like, oh, you're doing ketamine. What's that like?
Getting crazy.
And now I'm curious because, you know, I like drugs, and so I did ketamine one time. It is not my thing. We did acid on almost a weekly basis for close to a year. We called it the weekly reset. It was every Tuesday we would drop acid. And
how much were you, like, at that point? Like, you're doing acid every week. I don't know. That's one I haven't experimented
so
with yet.
So acid has, like, a logarithmic, like, tolerance kind of thing. No, exponential. Other way, logarithmic stuff. So it's exponential. So the more you take acid, especially consistently, the higher and higher and higher your tolerance gets for
okay,
it. So
yeah,
it's like any other drug in the sense that you're able to incorporate it, but it happens really, really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So like when we first started doing it, it was like we did it. Actually, so the first two times I ever met this guy, we did acid together. He came over to my house and we did acid, and then he came over again. A couple weeks later, we did acid again. And that was kind of the pace. It was about once a month we would take like a tab or two. And then we got a really good connection. It was $200 for a sheet, which is $2 a hit, which is phenomenal because you could sell 60 of the 100 tabs
yeah.
and make enough to buy the next three sheets.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were making profit off of that. But when we started doing it consistently, it started off as like, all right, let's warm up with two tabs.
Warm up with two tabs.
Because it just happens so quickly. And so you would warm up with two tabs, and it would be like 10 at night when I came home from work, and we would take two tabs. We start listening to music and playing games and drinking and stuff. And then 2 or 3 hours would go by. We're up at the peak of the trip now. We would take another two to kind of extend it. Because once you're up there, you kind of stay up there. There's not a lot of like weird, I don't know, like accelerant factors mm-hmm. to it. You just kind of peak. You just kind of hang out up there. So you take more and it makes the visuals crazier. It makes your body sensation crazier. But it's still like you've already gone through the
mm-hmm.
rough spot,
mm-hmm.
so you can kind of handle whatever comes at you after that. And so we'd warm up with two, take two more, and then we would usually take one as we're coming back down to ease the calm down, because the calm down can be kind of rough. And then within probably about 2 months, we started doing it every week when it became the weekly deal. And it was really quickly that it just turned into more and more and more. We got some liquid vial stuff, which was more potent and harder to measure. So you have no idea how much you're actually taking when you do the little liquid drops. But that was kind of part of the fun.
It was like, what's going to happen?
Yeah. We don't know. Like, and so
jeez,
we
man.
Would, it got to the point where we would come home, we would warm up by splitting a strip. A strip is 10 tabs. So I would come home and he would already be on, I don't know how many, but same thing. Now it's 10:30 at night and you're warming up with five. And then you
isn't
take...
Isn't that like a long trip too, though?
So it doesn't always affect the length of the trip. Usually it's kind of like no matter what, if you take a single tab and you have low tolerance, you're going to be tripping and experiencing effects for about 8 to 12 hours.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's like an 8-hour thing.
It's a long thing.
Up all night long?
Eventually you get to the point where you can sleep on it. It does take a while, but when you're taking it every week, your body gets
yeah.
very, very used to it. So it did get to the point where, you know, it's 10:30 and we start taking it, and we're taking three tabs at 3 a.m, and we took those tabs to go to sleep. It was, because the calm down has started for the first 8 that we took or
yeah.
whatever, and now we're like, all right, now I need a little bit to ease me into sleep. We would take 3 and then go to bed. And your dreams are insane.
Insane. I can't even imagine that.
It's nuts. There was one night I remember where I took some, and it wasn't ever really hitting. I never really felt it the whole night. And then I just took one more before I went to go to bed. And the second I got into bed and I closed my eyes, I saw demons on the back of my eyelids. And I woke back up, and I did not sleep that night. I could not close
wow.
my eyes again after that because I was terrified of the demons that were underneath my eyelids.
Yeah, that and would horrify the shit.
It was not pleasant.
It's not a good
no,
experience.
Not a good experience.
So I wanna ask you, best experience on acid and worst experience on acid.
All right,
and
so,
do you feel like there were determining factors that made them lean each way?
100%. I'm trying to think of my best. So the best experience I probably had on acid was my buddy Sam has a cabin south of Tahoe that is a family cabin of his, and we used to go there as a friends group every summer. We'd go for like a week. And then once we hit high school, we just started bringing drugs up with us. And then so I only went 2 years while I was living at this house with Tato. But both years, Tato and I both went up with Sam and all the guys, and we brought a bunch of acid both times. And so whatever the middle day of the trip was, we always did this big hike. That was a tradition. It was we'd spend 2 days running around the lake and hanging out and just kind of chilling. And then the third day, we would take this really, really long hike up to the top of this local mountain called Pooch Peak. And you can see the lake from hella far away, and it was gorgeous. And so I decided it'd be a fun day to take a bunch of fucking acid. And so Tato and I have like 20 hits plus some liquid stuff. And him and I woke up in the morning and we took one liquid dropper each, which is probably 2 or 3 hits. And then we just started hiking. And we go at a very kind of relaxed pace. No one's out here to conquer anything, right? We're just kind of hanging out. So we were going at a pace at which I could still keep up, even though I was like on acid.
Yeah.
And this is at the point where I am very experienced with it, so I can function very well. So we're walking, we're doing our thing. But just the nature scenery up there is already so gorgeous. And then you add the crazy acid visuals and the mindset that acid puts you in of just this kind of creative, you look at everything differently. I remember we were taking a break and I was staring out of some trees and I all of a sudden it clicked about why the Greeks used to think there was dryads and wood nymphs and stuff. If you I could see these little people dancing in the trees, and I was like, look there, let's look, it's got arms. I'm like, I was tripping. And so we kept walking. We got to this place called Enchanted Pools. That's a series of like rivers that run down in these big pools, and you can jump from one down to the next, down to the next, down to the next, down to the next. We normally just stay there for a half hour. We were there for like 2 hours, just hanging out, jumping. Todd and I took more when we got up there. Everyone else took like a half tab or something to kind of have some fun. But Tato gets really like spiritually when he trips a lot.
I love that.
So he's like out there with the liquid stuff, like blessing the land, like just dropping acid into the river and on bushes and shit. He almost gave it to Sam's dog, and Sam had to stop him. We were having a great time. And then we got up to the top and we put on some music and we just sat there and ate food and listened to some music and watched the lake and stuff. And it was just so much fun to be up there with all my friends and just tripping and blah, 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 blah. And then we came all the way back down the hill. We had some food. And then we took more acid and we took some canoes out on the lake. And we just canoed around the lake and we went swimming and we went fishing and we were out. There's this big rock in the middle of the lake called Turtle Rock that is like big flat rock and you can like build a fire on it. So right before sundown, we went and got a bunch of firewood, went out to the rock, built this big fire. We had beers and s'mores and all this
stuff.
Damn,
that sounds
epic. And there's no light pollution up there, so you get, there's much less light pollution. So you get to stare up at the stars and and then lo and behold, there was a meteor shower that night.
What?
So everyone else is sitting around talking, having fun. I'm fucking still tripping like nuts because I've been taking acid every 2 hours for 9 hours now. Longer than that almost. I think I remember calculating I did like 16 hits during the course of this day. And we're out on this rock and all of a sudden I saw stars shoot by and I was like, well, I'm on acid. That was definitely not real, right? And so I kept watching this guy. Everyone else is talking. I saw another one. And then another one, and I went, guys, like, there's a meteor shower right now. You gotta look up. And we all sat down and looked up, and I heard somebody go, whoa! Okay,
like,
so I'm not, this is not tripping. This is real. This is cool. Okay, I identified this. We got to watch a meteor shower. We were just out there for like 2 hours just talking and watching a meteor shower and tripping on acid, and it was so much fun.
That sounds like a killer experience.
It was a great experience. It was one of the times of just enjoying life
in company and
company
nature,
and the space you're in and the time you're in.
How old were you?
I was 22. I want to say 22 or 23.
That's a beautiful time to do something like
great,
that.
Great, great time to do that kind of stuff. Yeah, not too young where it's gonna fuck up your brain. Not too old where you're like, I have work tomorrow. Fuck, like I did have work in a couple days, but it was anyway. Worst experience on acid was, so the thing about acid is that there's not, you don't always get LSD. Sometimes you get research chemicals because it's
that's what's
really,
always scared me about it.
It's really hard to replicate accurately the effects of LSD because the effects of LSD are so, like, science doesn't know why some of the things that happen when you take acid happen. Like, there's been studies that have shown that sometimes it raises your body's temperature, sometimes it lowers your body's temperature. It's been shown to rewire neural structures within the brain. So psilocybin does the same thing. I've written some papers on psilocybin and LSD and their effects on the brain. And I, unfortunately, one time, I've taken enough acid that was actual LSD where I can tell the moment it hits my tongue whether it's real or whether it's not real.
Wow.
There's a certain feeling I get, and it's right in my spinal cord. Because LSD stays in your spinal cord. I don't know if you know that. If you take enough LSD, it tends to congregate in your spinal fluid. And then when you take more LSD, it'll re-release. Or if you do intense workouts and exercise, it'll release. And so there was times where I'd be at the gym, and all of a sudden I'm getting a little rattlesnake. I'm like, okay. Put the weight down and like focus for
breathe.
A minute. And I'm like, all right, get some water, hang out. Maybe we'll just go play basketball for a while.
Holy shit, man.
But I was living up in Bellingham, and I hadn't done acid in almost a year. It was like since I'd moved up, and this was towards the end of my tenure up in Bellingham. I only spent 1 year up there, and I got some chemicals, unfortunately, from a girl that used to work for us here, actually. And she insisted it was real. I didn't have a test kit, so I was just like, okay, this chick seems like she does a lot of drugs. I'm gonna take her word for it. Which was a mistake. And so I took two tabs, and immediately knew it was not acid. And I was like, well, fuck, this is gonna be a rough trip. You know, I can already feel. So I put on some TV, I was watching a TV show, and then started feeling really fidgety and just like kind of uncomfortable in my own skin. And so I went to just go lay down and go to bed. And the minute I laid down on my bed, I started getting the spins, like I was drinking.
Oh, goodness.
And I was like, oh, this is not fun. So I had to like sit up and I put my TV on again and I was trying to watch it. And then it just got to the point where, like, I couldn't hold a train of thought. I couldn't, like, hold it like a thought in my head. I was having trouble breathing properly. It was really shallow, really rapid breathing. And there was just nothing good about it, you know. I was in my little duplex unit. It was cold as shit. You know, there's no one home. There was nothing to go do. I couldn't go do anything. And it was just not a pleasant body or mind experience, and I had to sit there for like 8 hours.
Sit
because,
with it.
And that was the worst part. Was the second I started feeling all these bad things, like this is 45 minutes in, this is gonna be like this for 7 hours, like minimum. And that was probably the worst one, just because of the lack of options available to me to turn that around.
Yeah,
I've taken acid before, where sometimes you realize you took too much, and you're like, oh shit. And you're hanging out with your friends, and you just gotta go tell the people of like, yo, I am too high up there. I'm gonna need to chill for a minute. And everyone's usually really respectful about it. And they'll give you a couch, just kind of hang out on, listen to some music, and vibe until you're ready to come back into civilization. But this time there was nothing to do about it. So that was kind of my worst trip. Was just not having any options available. I think that was the biggest difference between the two was. Just the setting in general was, if I had taken that trip with all of my friends at, you know, this gorgeous place out in nature, it would have been an hour or so of being really rough and uncomfortable, and then I probably would have been able to turn it around and do the rest of the trip being very good once I could kind of hold my own again. But just having no one else there and having no options available for me to go try to break myself out of this, you know, mental and physical space I was in, just made for a really... really bad time.
Yeah, and that's what I find super like eye-opening about psychedelics. It's to me, because I'm the type of person, I haven't done like LSD or anything, but I've done mushrooms enough, and like to me I think it's really cool that it's if you're having that bad trip and it's starting to feel a little like, you know, not too great, you're truly forced to sit with those feelings.
Yeah.
And that's such a lesson that I feel like a lot of people need to learn, because that's how you learn to like emotionally regulate.
Well, so
you know?
One of the cool things that I like about mushrooms specifically, I don't take mushrooms anymore because I had the worst trip of my life on mushrooms the last time I took mushrooms. And so I've just stayed away from mushrooms since then. So here's the story of the mushroom one. I had a buddy that lived in Pittsburgh, California, which is not a good city. And his family was in cahoots. I don't have a good phrase for that. They were in with some gangbangers in the area.
Oh.
So they had like actual drug and gun violence and stuff going on around them.
Mm-hmm.
But the good news of knowing someone like that is they always have something fun. So I called him one night. I was like, hey, brother, what are you doing? He goes, nah, nice shit. Like, you trying to kick it? I was like, yeah. He's like, oh, I found a big bag of fairy dust under my bed. Fairy dust is just when you get a shitload of mushrooms and they're all in a bag and you take all of the good big mushroomy looking pieces
out.
You got
all your little pieces left.
Oh, little crumblies are left over, and that's called fairy dust, or referred to as fairy dust. So he brought this bag over, and I was assuming it was going to be like a vial full, you know, of 2 full ounces of fairy dust tops. And this guy brought it over, and it was like a pound Ziploc
bag. Oh my gosh.
Of fairy dust. And I was like, holy shit. And so he was like, you got like a plate? And I was like, yeah. And I figured he also had some coke, because that's normally what you need a plate for. And he just took the whole bag and dumped the bag out on the plate. And he just went, help yourself. And I was like, okay. And so we took a little bit, and we were very careful in the beginning about how much we were eating. And then we started tripping on mushrooms. And like an hour or so goes by of us just sitting, hanging out, listening to music, talking, tripping at my place. And all of a sudden I look down and I have the mushroom plate in my lap, and I am just snacking on mushrooms. I'm just eating mushrooms.
Like, didn't even think about it.
Wasn't thinking about it, just like, these are actually kind of tasty, which they're not. They're fucking gross.
They're gross,
But I was on enough mushrooms where I was like, I don't mind this. This is like a vegan sunflower chip thing. Like, I can do this. Put some salt on here. Fuck. And so I have no idea how much I actually took, but I took enough to the point where I like started freaking out of I had, you know, I started having, if anybody's taken enough, they know that there's a term called ego death that you can run into, which is where mushrooms and most other psychedelics have a disassociative influence. So you can kind of, your brain or your thought process and your consciousness gets kind of removed from yourself as a physical being.
Yeah, you like lose your sense
of
self.
You kind of lose your sense of self. And so I started having a lot of very intense feelings of, who am I? What does it mean to be me?
Fuck.
Who do I want to be? Well, you know, who should I have been by this point? And I was freaking the fuck out.
Yeah.
And luckily, the guy that I was with was a good enough guy where he sat there and he just talked with me through the whole thing. And, you know, I spent 2 hours, like, in this dude's arms, like, trying to just be comforted because I was freaking the fuck out. And so I do not take mushrooms anymore.
That'll do it, for sure.
The good news is, and this is something I've always liked about psychedelics, is that that removal from your normal state of mind is a really, really cool way to kind of take circumstance or to take stock of some mental issues you may have, because one of the biggest factors of going into any sort of psychedelic trip is your state of mind. Is you should not be taking psychedelics if you are not already in a pretty good standpoint, because it tends to exacerbate whatever mental condition you're in right now. So if you go in, and that's another reason why the right setting is important, is you need to have someone where you're comfortable with people that you enjoy, and like resources. You need to have something comfy, you need to have water, you need to have food, you need to have all these kinds of things, otherwise you can just turn bad. And so one of the things that it did for me that day was it made me realize that there was a lot of things I did not like about myself, or that I was uncomfortable with about myself, that I had never been forced to get that close to. You know, anytime I thought about that, I could always just kind of kick it to the side. I could go drink, I could go smoke.
Distract yourself.
They all go away. But it was one of the first times that I realized that was the reason behind a lot of my drug uses. What started as drug use, really to have fun in a social setting, and to, you know, get out and do what was the thing at the time, which was everyone drank, everyone smoked, y'all get together and party and stuff, rather quickly became me self-medicating. It would be me at home drinking by myself because I didn't like sitting with my thoughts. I didn't like sitting with who I was. And so that mushroom trip, the one good point was it pointed out a lot of things about myself that I did not like. And while I didn't do anything about it for a long time, when I eventually got sober and went to therapy, it was really, really easy to get started on a lot of these things because I had
they were pre-identified.
I had this list. I had already sat there and gone, I know exactly what things I don't like about myself, because I have had them pointed out to me time and time again on psychedelics. And there's actually been a lot of cool studies that have been coming out in the last decade or so about psilocybin specifically being used to treat PTSD in clinical research sessions.
Yeah. Because depression and anxiety.
Yeah, depression, anxiety, just like overstress and stuff like that. It's in a clinical setting. So you basically go to like an 8-hour long therapy session and it's a couple $100 and stuff.
You,
you microdose over the course of the trip. And it just helps you with getting out emotions or thoughts or words that you wouldn't normally be able to see clearly or be able to tell another human being. Because some of these things that people, you know, war veterans and stuff are dealing with is, you know,
gruesome shit.
Awful stuff. And they, justly so, don't feel like it's something that they can discuss with people most of the time. Because people, you need that that sympathy, that empathy from other people in order to feel confident that you can say these kinds of things. And people just aren't confident in that. So the psilocybin helps kind of open them up, and it's been shown to do wonders for PTSD and anxiety and stress and stuff like that, which is really cool.
Yeah, I'm very, very passionate about that, and I think that's the biggest thing that has made people have this negative view on psilocybin in specific, is that there are different ways. People use it recreationally, and people use it as a medicine, and that is, to me, it is a medicine, and I've always tried to go into it with the intention of, like, you know, what can I learn about myself? Like, like things like that. Just trying to keep it more of a sacred medicine more so than a recreational drug, because that's what's going to make these clinical trials and all these different things that they're trying to, you know, research being done on it. That's what's going to validate that is when people can view it as a medicine and not a drug. Because man, I don't know. It gets shit on, but I think it's something that could change so many people's lives. But on that topic, so much respect for you for being able to be self-aware enough to see all of that and be like, yo, maybe I should get some help. You're what? How many months sober now?
15 months sober.
That's
I'm
amazing.
Terrible at math.
That's okay.
It'll be a year and a half next month. Year and a half next month.
That's
so 17
a clap
sober.
For Ryan.
Yay.
A clap for Ryan. That's hard, man.
Clap for me. It's
that's
rough,
hard,
man.
Because you've been doing that since you were like 16, no? You've been
pretty...
On
at least one substance, almost 24/7 since about 16. I remember a couple of years ago when I made the decision to get sober from alcohol was the last one that I got sober from, because it was the one that was there's a reason they call it the creature of it. Fucking grips you and you don't even understand until you try to quit when you're really in it. But when I finally got sober from alcohol, there was a couple of months period of time where I was just not in any sort of like functional state of mind, because I was so focused on trying to get out of this and to have that withdrawal go as smoothly as possible. And smoothly as possible for an alcohol withdrawal is sort of an oxymoron. There's no smooth way about it. It's fucking rough. But when one of the things that happened was about 6 months into me being sober, I decided I needed therapy. And so I finally went and got some therapy, and thankfully the therapist that I see is one of my dad's good friends from AA. So she is very, very focused on addiction and what she calls, I forget exactly what it is, but it's like family, I don't remember what it is. It's something to do with family and like dysfunctional and addictive families and stuff like that. And it was exactly the kind of mindset of how to look at issues that I needed. It was because I had the background and everything I was a background of. And one of the things I just didn't even realize until I started going to therapy was how intrinsic to myself I had made substance use of. I've always loved the power of speech and about how like affirming things inadvertently makes them stronger. And so what I was doing over the course of years and years and years was I was telling myself and people, other people told me, you know, you're this druggy kid. I identified as a druggy.
And you just began to believe it.
And you just start to believe it, and then you don't view it as a problem. You view it as something that is intrinsic to you.
Yeah.
It's who I am. Why would I want to change me, you know? And so it took a lot of effort, and I'm still working on trying to extricate who I am from what I do.
Yeah.
Which is super hard.
It is,
especially in Western society, that is such an integral part of what people view you as. Mm-hmm. You meet somebody new for the first time.
Oh, what do you do?
Yeah. That's who are you? Yeah. Oh, that's cool. Where are you from?
Yeah.
What do you do? It's the next question.
Yep.
It's what you do. And it's such a hard thing to kind of unlearn. And I, like I said, I'm still in the process of trying to unlearn that idea of all of these things that I thought came naturally to being a part of me, like, you know, who, what I look like, what I sound like, how do people view me, you know, instead of how do I view me, of there's all these millions of different facets of who you are, and none of them do an encompassing job of describing who you actually are.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote some poetry one time when I was in a really bad state of mind. It's crazy how the worst state of minds bring out the best writing.
They do.
It's unfortunate.
It's
then
true.
You don't want to fix yourself because then you can't write
exactly.
anymore.
Exactly. That's like why alcoholics or comedians
exactly.
are alcoholics. Like,
I cannot
want to
be
sober.
Alcoholic. I won't be funny anymore.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Which sucks. It's horrible.
It's awful. But you realize pretty quickly that there's ways around that. But when I was first getting into that state of mind of, you know, who am I and all that kind of stuff. And it started to become really important to me to find out those answers. I had kind of noticed that my thinking went immediately to, well, is it something I should be doing? Is who I am something, or who I want to be more specifically, is it a kind of person, or is it like a goal? Is it, do I want to be, you know, a graphic designer? And then I was like, well, that doesn't really qualify as who you are. It's what you do,
mm-hmm.
that's not who you are. And I was like, okay, well then who do I think I am? And then I immediately started going, well, you are a drug addict, you are tall, you are thin, you have red hair. And I started describing myself, and I realized again that was not a very good description of who you are.
Because that's a physical,
because
more
those are
like
physical,
a, yeah,
representations
physical, yep.
of who you do, of what you are. And so I wrote some poetry about it. And what was really cool about the poetry was I wrote it all, and it was very free and it was very expressive. And then I went back and I read it, and it was almost like someone else had written that poetry.
Mm-hmm.
When I was reading it, I was surprised when I was rereading it about the impact that all of these sentences were having on the me, because I just wrote this like 10 minutes ago.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I went and ate a muffin and came back. And I was like, wow, that muffin woke up and said hello, you know, like, what is all this writing? Who wrote this? This is really good. And so I was reading it again, and one of the phrases that I wrote that stood out for me was, I can pull it up if I have some time later so I can tell you personally, but it was something along the lines of, you know, it was using words to describe a man is woefully inadequate for that man's soul, or something like that. It was saying that he is like something is a terrible analogy for saying who that person is.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really impactful to me, because it meant that I got to internalize that, and I got to say, you know what, where I am right now, my habits I've been doing up until this point, the people I've hurt, the people I should have been better to, you know, the decisions I shouldn't have made, the decisions I should have made, none of those things qualify as who I am.
Mm-hmm.
And what I eventually came to the conclusion of is, at least to me, I believe that who you are is up to you, and it can be changed at will at any time,
mm-hmm.
which is really scary,
mm-hmm.
but it's really, really cool. Because
very powerful.
It's very powerful for people who don't like the position they're in, or
mm-hmm.
people who say, you know, I've just been this fuck up my whole life. Because
mm-hmm.
I was the gifted kid. When I was, you know, I was the oldest kid, I was phenomenal at sports, I was phenomenal in school, and I realized in therapy that one of the reasons I started getting into drugs was because I didn't like people telling me who I was and
mm-hmm.
what I was going to do later on.
Mm-hmm.
Because that thought scared me, that I didn't know who I was, and these people all think I know, you know,
mm-hmm.
they know me better than I do. And then the fear came from I didn't know who the hell I was or who I wanted to be and all that kind of stuff. And so now at the age of 28, I'm doing what a lot of people did when they were young, and also what a lot of people never do, which is really take a reflection and an analysis of who do you believe you are right now? Who are you to you? And who do you want to be down the road? And what steps do you have to take to do that?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what I've been very involved in for the last, especially the last like 6 months here. Just before the year mark, I kind of had a turnaround, and the alcohol recovery finally became a positive thing instead of just a bunch of pain.
Yeah.
And that's what I've been working on a lot mentally recently, is just going, you know, who do I want to be as a person? What, and it comes down to me for what type of person do I want to be? What kind of impact do I want to have on the lives of others?
Mm-hmm.
Who do I want to be remembered as? You know, who are some of my idols and why do I idolize them? What are the qualities that they have that I value and that I honor and that I view as very exemplary and worthy of imitation? And it's a really long road, mm-hmm. but it's a necessary road that you have to walk if you want to have that kind of internal fulfillment,
I think. Yeah.
And that's something I've been really cognizant of recently, is just finding things. I think I might have told you this, I was talking to Riley, actually, mm-hmm. the other day, about how I despise that when you wake up on your days off, there's immediately like 9 things that you tell yourself, oh, I have to do this, I have to do this, mm-hmm. I have to do laundry, I have to go grocery shopping, I have to, you know, clean up after my cats, whatever it ends up being. And how one of the best things I've done for myself recently is I relabeled all of these things as little gifts. And so now every time I say, oh, I have to do something, I immediately have to stop myself and in my head go, no, you're giving yourself this thing. And it sounds like a weird switch, mm-hmm. but all it is instead of waking up and saying, oh, I have to do laundry, what you do is you wake up and you say, oh, today I'm going to give myself the gift of clean clothes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to give myself the gift of a clean bedroom. I'm going to give myself the gift of good food, of mm-hmm. things to eat to nourish myself.
Yep.
I'm going to give myself the gift of being better at piano. I'm going to go practice piano for a half hour.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to do that, but
it's a gift to myself.
It's a gift to myself.
Yeah.
If I want to be better at piano, which I do,
mm-hmm.
you do have to practice.
Yeah. That is such a beautiful form of reprogramming the mind. I am such a big fan of like being intentional with your words.
Yeah.
It actually impeccable with your words, if we want to like reference the Four Agreements.
Yeah.
Like that is truly being impeccable with your word, because they carry such weighted vibration, and it is so important to speak with intention, because everything, it's like spells, man. They're like spells.
Yeah.
They really, really are. So when you're saying those negative things about yourself, whether it be to someone or to just in your brain, that shit fucking, it messes with you.
Yeah. No,
so if you can reprogram that, that can change your life, that one act alone.
Yeah. It's,
you know,
one of the strongest ways you can model yourself is with language.
Mm-hmm.
And just by simply changing the language that you use, you can very, very drastically affect how you operate within the context of your world.
Yeah. And your happiness too, man.
Yeah.
Like, it is a direct reflection of your happiness.
Oh, 100%. Like, I used to, even after I was sober for forever, I would still wake up some days and I would feel like shit, because, you know, I spent my whole first day off or whatever just playing video games.
Mm-hmm.
And then you wake up in the morning and you're like, oh, I wasn't productive yesterday, I didn't do anything yesterday, blah, 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 blah. And now I've been better about stopping myself and going like, you know what, no, like, you work 5 days a week, you've been going to school 5 days a week for forever, you've been doing all of these things with alcohol recovery, and you play instruments, and there's all these things that you do all the time. Like, you deserve a day off every
mm-hmm.
once in a while, and what you wanted to do is you wanted to play games.
Yeah.
And you did it, and the whole day you had a great time. But just trying to reprogram that language from a day wasted to a day spent doing something you liked.
Yeah.
Even though it wasn't a productive thing.
Yeah.
You know,
because
I got such that type A personality where
if
I'm not doing something every second of every day, it's wasted.
Well, and people, I feel like there's a societal pressure that if you are resting, you are wasting time.
Wasting
or
time.
You are being lazy, like, which is absolutely not true. Rest is so productive.
So critical.
If you are doing it correctly, you know what I mean? And like, having fun and taking time to like step back and slow down is so important in this fast paced fucking world that never gives anybody more than a 30-minute break.
No.
Like, it is ridiculous, the pressure that's
vital.
Put on that.
It's vital.
And
especially being able to retool in your brain that these things that you do for yourself are gifts that you give yourself, has been huge on just how I perceive my day now. Because, like, you know, for example, today I woke up and had breakfast, had coffee, and then I played piano for like an hour. And, you know, it hasn't had, my whole day has not gone by yet by any stretch of the word. But already now I've given myself like three good gifts. I woke up and I ate good food, I had good coffee, and I made myself a little bit better at piano. And where it's only noon, you know? And so like
that's a beautiful day.
Yeah, hell of a day ahead of us. Yeah. Now we've knocked out a lot of things in the first 2 hours.
Exactly.
It's a good day. And it's just those switches of being able to mentally retool how you talk about yourself and how you talk about what you do, because it is so critical to how we perceive ourselves and how we perceive the world. So it's very, very fun to look at how language affects action.
And that's such a big gift that you can give to other people too, because that seeing that, being around people who do that and are intentional with their words is contagious, and like you start to pick up on that little by little, and that is how we create better communities. Is if we could have a collective consciousness that were like that, it would be so much of a better world, because everyone as an individual would be so much happier. And man, little steps they matter.
Acts of greatness are not done in a day, they are a collection of small acts of insignificance.
I love that.
It's just that you don't get to some crazy place in your life, you know, by just stepping out one day and saying, I'm going to do this, and then you do the whole thing at one shot. It's not how this works. You know,
it's inches to miles,
It's inches to yards to miles. That's exactly what that is. You should, there's a lot of great quotes from Alcoholics Anonymous that I wrote off as being very cliche and tacky at first. And now they show up every single day in my life. And one of my favorites is, we are not saints, we preach progress rather than perfection. And that's always, I may not be who I want to be, but I'm better than who I was yesterday. And that's what that's become two of my mantras now, as I wake up in the morning and you go, you know what, I'm a little bit healthier, I've been eating a little bit better, I've been taking a little bit care of myself, and I'm not at the point I want to be, but shit, we're getting there.
And
it's better than I can say for how I was going for the last decade before, you know, before I became sober. And so thank goodness I had that moment of clarity to get sober. It was the best thing I've done for myself maybe in my entire life.
And I'm proud of you for that, dude.
Thank you.
That's killer work.
It's
because I do remember the very first time that I ever went out with the staff. We went over to the bar you downed like 6 drinks in a matter of 20 minutes, and I was like, oh my god, I think that was your birthday, because you guys got a bunch of bear fuckers, no?
Well, we got bear fuckers all the time, but that was my birthday, because we went there, and I had a beer when I walked in. No, I had a bear fucker to start with Karn, and then I had a double Jameson ginger ale, and then I had an IPA. And then Marissa bought all of us bear fuckers, and I ended up drinking all three of them at the same time. I just went boom, 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 back to back to back. And bear fucker is a beer and a shot, so it's two drinks. And so, and then I went and had another beer, and then we had another bear fucker, and then we left. And so, in the span of like, we were only there for like an hour and a half.
Yeah, no, it wasn't.
And like an hour and a half, I think I had 11 drinks.
And now here you are.
And now here I am. I haven't had a single one in a year and a half. So that was one of the funny things I've run into, like when I was, especially when I was going to Western, I felt very old, because I was like 28 in a class full of 18-year-olds. And it was something I had to unlearn again with my language, was not, you know, not old by any standards, just older than these people. And I was talking to some of the kids that were in school with me, and you know, they're inevitably going, what do you do? You know, what are you about? Blah, 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 blah. And I mentioned to a couple of them that, you know, I'm about a year sober. I was about a year sober at the time. And all of them asked the same question, and they said, why? And I was like, that's a really interesting response to, you know, I've been sober for a year. And then I remembered, I was like, oh, these people are like 18 years old.
Yeah, they're like a couple years into their drug journey.
Yeah, they are just starting what I was on for over a decade. And I, without flinching, would tell them that I have drank more alcohol by this point in my life than most people will ever consume in their lifetime. And they go, that doesn't sound possible. And then I'd show them the math on, no, for 10 years, I drank every day, and I averaged about 4 or 5 drinks a day. On average. And if you do that math, it's like drinking 2 drinks a day for 40 years. And so, yeah, most people, when they start when they're 20, they die around 65, 70. And if you were to have 2 drinks a day every day for 40 years, starting when you were 18, you would still not have drank as much alcohol as I drink. So trust me when I say I know how that goes.
You're like, I've been around the block.
I know. I was a pioneer, brother. I was Oregon trailblazing. Down the alcohol
road.
That's
fucking crazy. crazy, yeah, man.
So it's a good road on recovery. There's something they say about a pink fluffy cloud that you see one day, and you got to catch that cloud, and it has not shown up yet. But I'm starting to understand why they might say that. You know? Okay, I can see that. You know, eventually one day this kind of clicks and this sets in, and then you're off to the races.
But yeah. It is very, very inspiring, truly. Like, thank you. I wouldn't say that I have, like, any massive, massive addictions. God knows, right? When you're in them, you're never really aware of them, right? No. So I'm not going to say that for, like, sure
it's not an abuse until you stop the use.
I feel pretty in control, but I know how quickly that type of shit can turn around. Yeah. I've seen and experienced that in my life, and It's a tough journey. So
it's a hard one.
I tip my hat to you.
Well, especially in a society like the United States of America, where it's such a prevalent thing.
Mm-hmm. Everywhere. It's like, well, I was thinking about this shopping last night, where it was like non-alcoholic beverages is said on most menus.
Yeah.
Why does it, non-alcoholic beverages, the like, fact, it should just be a beverage.
A beverage, yeah, soda.
Like,
yeah,
what?
Water, and then there should be alcoholic beverages,
exactly,
right?
Exactly, yeah.
And just the fact that when we say drugs and alcohol, we list them as two separate things. Alcohol is a drug. It is the most popular drug in the United States of America, mm-hmm, besides ibuprofen. It is the second most purchased beverage, or purchased drug in America. And it is sold at the grocery store, right next to the meats.
Right next
right
to
the
meats.
Meats. It's always that, you know, they're pack. Getting a steak and a six pack. And you go to other countries, and I forget why. I don't want to state the country because I'm going to be wrong, but there was a country I remember looking up where they passed a law that banned the sale of alcohol in grocery stores. And over the next 5 years, the rate of alcoholism in the country declined by 18%. So almost a fifth of people who were or alcoholics stopped being alcoholic. Because it just wasn't as common anymore.
Yeah.
You had to go to a specific alcohol store, and now it's associated with a drug store. Now you see the link between it being a drug. Because it used to be like, oh no, I gotta go get the essentials.
Yeah.
Coffee, toilet paper, beer.
Yeah.
And
now it's like, oh, now I have to go to,
now I have to go
the
to
liquor,
the liquor store where they sell.
And that's a little intense. And cigars and all the shit. Yeah.
Heathens shopping.
Heathens.
So it's a whole different
mindset, but. Yeah, but it's just testament to how life is really all about perspective, and if you can change and be a little bit more conscious of your own perspective, you can take really big leaps in life.
You'd be surprised what you can do with the right mindset.
Okay, to end this little interview.
Okay.
Hot seat. We're doing tea time.
Oh, tea
it's
time.
It's tea time. Teed up right now.
Teed up right now.
Okay, I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, like a couple of questions they're gonna get
all right,
loose, and then
hit me.
Favorite color?
Favorite color, purple.
Favorite food?
Oh, you can't do that to me.
Ah!
Oh, my stomach hurts. You can't do that to me.
First thing that comes to mind.
Bacon.
Bacon. Actually, you put bacon on everything, so I'll take that answer.
Yeah, I do put bacon on everything.
First pet's name.
First pet's name was Sandy. I had a dog named Sandy.
Sandy, what kind of
Sandy
dog?
Sandy Rose. She was a golden retriever.
Oh, how cute.
Sandy Rose.
Sandy the golden. Who in your family is top tier?
Ooh, top tier. I'm going to say my dad. My dad is a top tier individual.
Oh,
he was
a
despicable piece of work for a long time. But he is like 4 years ahead of me on this recovery, better myself road.
Yeah.
And I am so proud of him.
Oh, I love that. Have you ever been in love?
Yes.
I love that answer. Oh, I love love. Favorite place you've lived?
Ooh. That's a good one. Lived? Probably Santa Barbara. I love Vista, California. It's hard to be sad when it is 82 degrees.
And there's a beach right next to you.
300 days a year. Yeah, it's hard.
Best holiday?
Best holiday. I'm gonna go with Christmas. I think Christmas is my best holiday.
It's happy.
It's
jolly.
It's got a jolly
little vibe.
Oriented jive.
If you could bring one person back to life, who would it be?
Ooh. One person. God, there's so many people. I want to say like Jimi Hendrix would be a great person to bring back to life, because I just think he died so far ahead of when he, you know, he was such a pioneer in that music scene. And he's such an idol of mine for guitarists that I think having him around again would be crazy.
The world would explode.
It might. That motherfucker invented overdrive on guitars. I can't imagine what other shit he would have come up with.
If you could change one thing about your life, what would it be?
That's a good question.
Nothing is also an acceptable answer.
I think what my response to that is I don't think I would change in an instant anything about my life. I think there are things that I have noted that I am working on changing, but I have become a person of the journey is the destination, as tacky as that sounds. I think the process of working through things on your own to get what you want is such a valuable part of life. Life is what happens in between the days, in between the goals, in between these big events. Life is what happens in between those things. So I think just by choosing something to change, I think I'm shorting myself out of life. And so I'm going to say nothing. I
wouldn't change. That deserves a handshake.
I wouldn't change it.
That was beautiful, and that was the answer I wanted, and I knew I would get that shit from you.
Oh, I knew it.
Why you are on the fucking podcast.
I'm the best.
First guest of the year, and it started off damn strong. Yeah. These bitches better be fucking ready.
We set a precedent. You better be clever,
the
motherfucker.
The
bar is high.
You better use big words. Oh, man. Thank you so much for
doing this. You're very
welcome.
Thank you for
having me.
This has
been long awaited.
It's
been
fun.
Yeah.
I would love to come back again.
Yeah.
Always be it.
And the next time, you'll probably be some fucking crazy science, computer science, fucking genius taking over the world.
We're going to hope that it's not that quick, because there were some shortcuts I would have taken if it was that quick. I paid somebody a lot of money to get that. We're working on it.
Oh, fuck. Oh, man.
Would be nice.
Well,
though.
Thank you for listening. Thank you for showing up to my... I'm never good at the endings. All right, bye.